talking with the experts.
But, you know, how can we minimize this conflict, and how do we navigate it?
The conflict of change?
Yeah, I think so.
So are you talking about the conflict? Because I talk about the eternal conflict, which is where the world is in a constant state of change, and anything that's transactional, a business, a nonprofit, anything that's transactional, people want it to stay the same. Mm. They don't want things to change, because when it changes, they have to change what they do. So every business is in this, living in this space where the world is forcing them to change and they don't want it. To me, that's the eternal conflict. So if that's what you're talking about, to me, once again, we have to go back to, you have to be passionate about the purpose. You have to be passionate about what you're doing and why you're doing it. And then everything has to be connected to that.
Welcome to Talking with the Experts. This is where we discuss great ideas to take your business to the next level. How do we know these ideas work? Well, it's because we're talking with business owners who are using these ideas. Business owners who have years of experience and expertise. All things business, by business owners, for business owners. And now, here is your host, Rose Davidson.
Hello, welcome to Talking with the Experts. I'm your host, Rose Davidson. Talking with the Experts is all about business, by business owners, for business owners. You can find it on all podcasting streaming platforms and on YouTube. And don't forget to like, share, and ding for those notifications so that you know when the next episode is delivered. My guest today is Larry Mandelberg, and Larry's going to be talking to us about how to survive success and thrive in good times and bad. And we'll talk about his book too, Businesses Don't Fail, They Commit Suicide. I'm interested to know where that title came from. Now, Larry is a person who solves complex problems. He had a fourth generation head start, and this consultant, speaker and author represents the fifth generation of his family's business, so he inherited 170 years of organizational success experience. Larry is an effective catalyst for change who achieved new levels of efficacy and growth for businesses in industries as diverse as software, automotive, education, and agriculture. As a prolific writer, Larry has published more than 80 columns. His first book, Businesses Don't Fail, They Commit Suicide, was released in April 2023. He's a sought-after speaker. He has delivered more than 60 business-changing keynotes and workshops. And welcome, Larry, to Talking with the Experts.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about this 170 years of experience. I mean, it's combined experience, because you're not that old, obviously.
Obviously. Well, my family started in hides and furs in the mid-1850s. And one of the realities of this world is that it's constantly changing. So as the world changes, business wants stasis, but it can't survive if the business doesn't change. So my family has gone through many industries, and the organization that started in hides and furs has survived since its initial start by adapting and changing and finding ways to leverage their knowledge and strength for profit and for success. The last piece that the business was doing was what's called the automotive aftermarket. It's auto parts and machine shop work for motors. So they've been able to survive all that time. And my great-great-grandfather believed that it was his part of his job, because you have to remember, in the 1800s, there was no corporations, right? Mm-hmm. These were all family businesses. So he believed that he needed to teach his son everything he learned about doing business, which he did. It was the original pay it forward concept. My great-grandfather taught my grandfather. My grandfather taught my father. My father taught me. So there are things that we've been doing since the 1850s that were handed down to me. So I feel like that's part of my competitive advantage to have that rich family history of success and transition and the understanding of how to transition and maintain. That's where that comes from. And it's really meaningful to me.
Yeah, it would be. I guess, the pass it on theory is one that I'm very much using it, for anything that I do. So, I always pass on either knowledge or my time or tangible things as well. So I get the concept totally. I would love to discuss with you the arc of success and what impacts the successful and growing organizations.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's one of my favorite findings. As you know, this book was born out of 23 years of primary research. So what you have in this book is a lot of data, not a lot of opinion. And one of the things that came out of this research was this concept of how organizations mature, how they grow, how they become better. And that's where the arc of success came from. And it's kind of a simple concept. And it highlights the trigger that causes business failure, which is change. If everything always stayed the same, businesses that are successful would continue to be successful, right? Why would they fail? Well, it's because change. Change brings in something that has to be adapted to. And when people don't adapt well, they make bad decisions, and those bad decisions weaken the organization. And if they're bad enough, they lead to failure. Arc of success. It starts with I have an idea and I want to try it. If I try it and it works, that creates growth. People want more, and I want to give them more. Growth creates complexity. Handling 10 customers is different than handling 30. Which is different than handling 300 or 3,000. 10 employees is simpler than 100 employees. So growth creates complexity. As you become more complex as an organization, the only way to manage it is to put in controls. So complexity leads to the need for controls. Once you start putting controls in place, you end up reducing flexibility. Because people lose their freedom based on these new controls. So you go from this freewheeling, I got a great idea, let's try it, to wait, you can't do that. And it's a pretty traumatic shift if you live through the entire experience. And I've got a great story if you want about this. So one of my clients, there was a core group of 50 people that were managing about another 500 people there were a total of four organizations. And one of the things that happened was that they realized that they were always running out of certain paper in the main office, and they always had a surplus of other paper that they were buying, but nobody was using it. They didn't know why they kept buying it. So they changed the rule, and they said, you no longer get to buy your own office supplies. We're going to centralize all the office supply purchases. Now, this is a little teeny change, right? But what ended up happening was the people in the main office revolted. Three of the staffers got really upset. They said, what's the matter? You don't trust us? You think we're stealing? You can just imagine how they felt. And they just raised holy hell. And they had about 30 people on the verge of quitting. So they called me in, and I talked to them, and I explained the arc of success to them. And I said, you should be proud of yourselves. You are the reason this company is so successful. Your efforts, your skill, your performance. You guys have made this company as successful as it is, and you've driven the growth. You've created the complexity through that growth. And it's your fault that these controls had to be put in place. You did such a good job. So I want you to shut up and stop complaining about the problem you created because you did such a good job. And if you don't like it, go find another company that's small, that's starting out, where you can have that freedom and go work for them. Otherwise, stay here, get on board, and let's move on to the next level. And they were just, their jaws dropped. They were like, how did he turn that around on us? He made it our fault. And it was over in an hour. This revolt that had been brewing for months ended like that by explaining the arc of success to them.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting story. And I think, you know, sometimes people have to step back and see that the processes that are in place or have been put in place are for their own good, even if they don't agree with them. And I think that comes down to change management and how these changes are, you know, explained to the wider work community.
Yeah, I agree. Change management is a key component of all of this. A lot of this has to do with perspective. If you don't have a shared goal, then you can't keep people happy as change occurs. Because continued pursuit of a goal requires adaptation. And as long as you have people who are committed to the goal, in this case, it was an educational organization, and they were passionate about educating children, that was what kept them there, that passion for the goal. What they didn't like was the operational piece. So, yeah, there's perspective. A lot of this has to do with being clear about that purpose, so that when you hire, you're hiring people who are passionate about the purpose, and they come on board feeling like they're part of a bigger effort, right? All of these things play into it, and all of these things are, these are all part of the things I address in the book.
Yeah, I would like to also discuss about the endless business conflict that every organization navigates. You know, there is the change management and your arc of success, but you know, how can we minimize this conflict, and how do we navigate it?
The conflict of change.
Yeah, I think
so. Are you talking about the conflict? Because I talk about the eternal conflict, which is where the world is in a constant state of change, and anything that's transactional, a business, a nonprofit, anything that's transactional, people want it to stay the same. They don't want things to change, because when it changes, they have to change what they do. So every business is in this, living in this space where the world is forcing them to change and they don't want it. To me, that's the eternal conflict. So if that's what you're talking about, to me, once again, we have to go back to, you have to be passionate about the purpose. You have to be passionate about what you're doing and why you're doing it. And then everything has to be connected to that. This change will help us achieve our goals. If we don't change, we will lose our leverage. And one of the change management tools that I use, which I find to be incredibly effective, comes from an organization called ProSci, P-R-O-S-C-I. And their model is called ADCAR. And ADCAR stands for Awareness, Desire, Knowledge, Action, Reinforcement. And I've used this on small projects. I've also used it on, I used it on a project that I was a lead on that was a $350 million project. And it's based on, start with awareness that change is inevitable. It's inevitable. You can't avoid it. Stop trying. All you're going to do is hurt yourself. The second stage is desire. Once we accept the fact that it's going to happen, let's stop fighting about it. Let's start looking at the things that this change will give us that have been on our want list that we haven't been able to have. We can also talk about some of the things that we like that we're losing. But if we're going to talk about those, let's talk about some of the things that we don't like, because no environment is perfect. So let's be realistic. Let's talk about what we're losing that we like. But let's also remember that there's stuff we're losing that we hate, that we won't have to put up with anymore. And because it's inevitable, let's focus on the good. We can focus on the bad, but let's not. Let's focus on the good. And remember, we're all here to achieve the same thing. So you create the awareness that it's inevitable. You extract out the desires so people are focusing on the desire and not the negatives. Then you deliver the knowledge on what's going to happen and how it's going to affect them. And then you give them penalty-free environments to practice. You encourage failure. You encourage experimentation. That's a whole nother, I mean, that's another 4-hour conversation. But that's how you deal with it. Because if you're not changing, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're dying, right? The world is changing. When Amazon started, their motto, their vision statement was to be the source for all things online. Now, today, Amazon has markets and grocery stores and bookstores, site-based businesses, right? They have drop-off centers. They have pickup centers. They are not 100% online. Right? Amazon had to adapt, and they did it quite effectively.
Yeah. And, you know, if we don't speak up about the things that we don't like, things will never change. And, you know, the things that we're losing that we do like, you know, sometimes we like them because they're a habit. It's just something that we have grown used to. It's like one of the national supermarkets here is reducing their stock by 10%. Now, the populace don't like that because, you know, they're going to lose some of the products that, you know, that they would buy regularly every week. But the fact is that the supermarket is reducing their stock because a lot of it is doubled up stock. So, you know, you buy corn chips, for instance, and they probably have, you know, 10 brands. Why have 10 brands when you can, you know, sufficiently work with 3 or 4. So I understand the thinking behind it, but I also understand that people don't like the change, that this is going to happen, because they go shopping and they just buy things in, you know, in habit.
Right. Well, there's an element of in change of the unknown, and the people who are losing the corn chips that they love are asking themselves, what's going to happen to me? Am I going to have to buy corn chips that I don't like? I'm going to have to experiment. I'm going to have to throw money away and try these. And what if I don't like anything? And then I'll have to give up corn chips. It's this fear of something that isn't happening. Let me tell you another little story, because this has to do with this attitude about change. Whenever I do presentations to groups of people, I always start by asking the audience, If they believe, generally speaking, do you believe that people like change? And depending upon the size of the audience, very few hands go up. I mean, if there's 30 people, I might get one hand. If there's 500 people, I might get 6 or 7 hands, right? And then I say, how many of you, generally speaking, believe people don't like change? And of course, all the hands shoot up. And then I say, you are wrong. Every single one of you that's raising your hand is wrong. Every single person loves change. Change is not the problem. What they love is change they do unto others. What they hate is change others do unto them. So what you have to do is learn how to make change yours. You have to make it owned by you. So instead of complaining, say, we've got a change coming. Here's something we love. We're going to embrace it. Here's something we hate. We're going to go talk to management and say, we don't like this change. We love that change. Don't fight the change. You can't fight the change. But use that opportunity to leverage your acceptance and embracing of the good. Remember, keep the good on top of mind and say, some of these changes are good, some of these are not. Let's do some of the things that are a little different that might make the bad ones better. Can you imagine what would happen if 30% of the customers of this supermarket all got together and communicated to corporate that they wanted this particular brand of chips to not be discontinued, what do you think would happen? They wouldn't be discontinued,
No.
right? But people don't think that way. They don't think I've got an opportunity here. So there's a big mindset that's the obligation of leadership to instill in their staff to help make sure that they stay well taken care of and have a positive feeling about the organization. And again, that glue, that stake in the ground is that purpose, that goal. Here's what we're trying to achieve, right? This school company I talked about, their whole goal is to change education, change the way education works, individualized learning plans. We have 9,000 students, 9,000 learning plans. So it's important to them, right? Because most of them are parents.
Yeah, no, change can be scary, but for the most part, most change is good. There's a little bit that isn't, but we have to live with it because sometimes there's just nothing we can do about it. But life goes on, and you're not going to die if someone changes something.
There's a little bit of bad in everything. If there didn't have any bad, you wouldn't know when things were good.
That's it. Absolutely. Now, there's three reasons that organizations fail, and that comes down to the three P's. Or is it an organizational fault that that this business isn't doing so well?
Well, yeah, my whole premise to this was to find out why businesses failed. And the research uncovered this. It uncovered these three reasons that I just found fascinating. And it had to do with the level of experience of the leadership team and the organization as a whole. And what I found was that in the younger, there were three groups, three segments, and I call them youth, adolescence, and adulthood. There are not, how do I say this? It's not like age boundaries. It's not like where you say you can't drink until you're 21. It's not that hard a boundary, but it's a boundary where once the organ it's so it's clarity of purpose, consistency of performance, and engagement of people. Purpose, performance, people, the three Ps. So early stage businesses always that fail. Always fail because they don't have clarity of purpose. Middle stage businesses, adolescent, always fail because they don't have consistent performance. Mature adult businesses fail because they don't have engagement of people. Now, there's a lot of ways to interpret those simple phrases. They can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. So let me just explain the first one, clarity of purpose. Because when I talk to business people, the first thing they say to me is, well, that's ridiculous. We've been in business for 10 years. You think we don't know what we're doing? Of course we do. We know what we do. We know who we sell to. I said, fine. I won't argue about this with you. Here's a mental exercise I want you to do for me. Just imagine you're going to ask five of your key people from different areas in the organization, ask five key people to write down what they believe the purpose of this organization is. And I guarantee you, I mean, I imagine in your own mind, now I'm talking to the leader, right? In your own mind, I'll imagine you can just hear these people talking to you. You can hear yourself asking them, hear them talking. You're going to get five different answers. That's not clarity of purpose. That's misalignment. And when you have people you're paying money to who aren't aligned and moving in the same direction as a solid unit, you are wasting resources that you cannot recover. There are three resources every business has. There are people, money, and time. And when you have people that aren't aligned, you're wasting one or more of those resources and you can't get it back.
No.
So don't tell me you have clarity of purpose. So that's kind of how those three P's work. So the more you have that lack of cohesiveness, lack of consistency, the more harm it does you, And in your early stage, when revenues and sales are so critical, it doesn't take much to lose some of those key resources before you fail. In adolescence, consistency of performance, it's the same thing. How do you survive when you've got two people doing the same job when it only takes one? How do you survive when something falls through the cracks every time because nobody is aware that they're responsible for making sure it gets taken care of and nobody's checking? How do you deal with people not really knowing what their job is? How do you deal with people not understanding who they're supposed to be selling to? Do you have McDonald's in Australia? I'm sure you do.
Absolutely.
So when you go into a McDonald's and you order a Big Mac, now think about this. That's the same sandwich that's sold from one end of the globe to the other. It's the same structure, it's the same food. It's crappy food. It's not very good. It's filling. It's not very healthy. It's filling and it's cheap. But it's the same food everywhere. And when they serve it to you, it's the same package. And if you order a Big Mac and they bring you out something wrapped in a package for a quarter pounder, you don't even see it, smell it, or taste it. You're like, that's not what I ordered. And I did that once at a McDonald's, and the guy said, "It's okay, sir. We ran out of Big Mac wrappers. It's a Big Mac inside." I said, "Show me." So, consistent performance is not about quality. It's about the ability to make commitments to your employees, your vendors, and your customers that they can depend on. When you are performing consistently, you can make promises and they trust you. When you can't do that, they don't trust you. That's why that's the key to that adolescent piece.
Yeah, it's really important that the know, like, trust thing is really important. And I think that if you can't be consistent with your product or your sales procedure or processes or your consistency with the way you lead your team, people are going to leave, or they're going to not the customers aren't going to like you. They're going to leave because the things aren't the same, each time. And McDonald's really has the them, and I don't know if you call them Burger King, but we call them Hungry Jack's. They're the same. Everything's constructed in the same way, and people know what they get each time they go there. But if you go to a business that's not serving in the same way each and every single time, and there is that inconsistency, then people are going to wonder, what's going on? Why isn't it the same? Why am I being treated differently? Or why am I receiving a different product or service? So I understand completely about, about the 3 Ps and how an organization and their structure from, each of the births, I suppose you could call them, can move forward as a business and use those 3 Ps and be consistent.
Well, and it's easy to talk about the customer experience, but don't lose sight of the fact that you have other stakeholders. You have vendors and employees.
Well, that's
You know
true.
what it's like when employees aren't treated consistently. When one employee sees another employee being treated one way and they're treated another. Or how about the employee that does a great job, gets a great review, and then the next block of time they do us the same great job and get a crappy review, right? So this consistency of performance permeates everything the organization does. It's not just about the customer
Oh,
experience.
absolutely. Yeah, well, I was just using that as an example. It's what came top of mind. I guess tell me a little bit about the title of your book. I'm sort of understanding now why you've titled it the way you have, but tell me, how did you come up with it?
So in 2014, I had a handful of people trying to understand what I did, what my consulting company did. And I was having a hard time describing it because consulting is kind of amorphous. It's like, it's consulting. What do you mean? We do facilitation and strategic planning and, So I hired a company to do a brand equity assessment of my practice. And they talked to employees, customers, colleagues, clients, a whole group of people. And during the that was about an 8-month process. And during that process, the person doing the research for me made a comment about business failure. And without even thinking about it, the way she said it kind of aggravated me. And I said, businesses don't fail, they commit suicide. And she said, what do you mean? I said, well, they don't fail. They make stupid, bad decisions that cause them to go down. She says, are you saying that every time a business fails, it's the fault of the leader? I said, absolutely. Why wouldn't it be? What about the pandemic hadn't hit at that point. But what they said was, what about the collapse in 2006 with real estate? Lots of companies went out of business. So the leader's responsibility is to make sure the company is prepared for whatever. That's their responsibility. If they're not preparing the company, shame on them. It's their fault. So we did this, and at the end of the 8 months, and she gave me the report, she said, I've got a special gift for you. I said, what's that? She says, I've got the name of your book. I said, you're kidding. She says, no, I've got the title for your book. I said, what is it? And she showed it to me. So she had this little folder. She made it kind of secretive and everything. Mock-up little book. Businesses don't fail, they commit suicide. And I said, her name was Kathy. I said, Kathy, that's brilliant. That is fabulous. I love it. How in the world did you come up with that title? She says, you said it 8 months ago. I didn't even remember saying it.
Yeah, I guess it is right too, because it is the fault of the leader because they're not leading. A lot of leaders don't know how to lead. They think that managing and leading is exactly the same thing, but it certainly is not. And
Oh.
I've done a human resources course, and I've owned a business, and I've worked for businesses that shouldn't be in business because the leadership and management were just they just had no clue.
Yeah.
Is there anything, Larry, that anything else you wanted to share with our audience today?
Well, I will say one of my little sayings that I've created is profit without purpose is pointless. Too many businesses feel like they exist to make money, and that's not enough. You have to do more than just make money. You have to provide value. Otherwise, you can't create loyalty. You can't retain clients. You can't retain people. You can't deal with change. You can't say to people, let's do this together, right? Because how do you say, let's go make money together? Well, that's ridiculous. Everybody needs money. Let's go do something valuable together that we'll feel good about and get paid. Profit without purpose is pointless. The other thing I'd like to share, Rose, is that this book is about 70% data. This is not a book about my opinions. It's about 70% data. It's about 15% actual real-world experience stories that have been fictionalized to protect the companies. Many of the companies have been hidden, that information script, but they're all real. They've all happened. One of the stories is called The Case of the $362,000 Check, where I found a check in a drawer that was years old for $362,000 and nobody even knew it was missing. And it talks about systems and structure. These stories highlight it. So the book is very much a guide, not on how to avoid failure, but on what you need to do to succeed, which is the subtitle, How to Succeed, How to Survive Success and Thrive in Good Times and Bad. So it's literally a step-by-step process, including an assessment in the last chapter of the strengths and weaknesses of your organization and instructions on how to strengthen those weaknesses and make you resilient. Help you build clarity of purpose, help you build consistency of performance, and help you create engagement of people.
Wonderful. And that's available on Amazon.
It's available on all the popular spots, Amazon, Apple, Play Store, Barnes and Noble. It's everywhere that books are sold, basically.
Wonderful. Now you can find Larry on Facebook and LinkedIn, and his website is mandelberg.biz and also on businessesdontfail.com. Larry, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing with us today. I look forward to getting this episode out as quickly as I can and sharing whatever the knowledge that you've imparted today.
Rose, I appreciate the time. I so hope your audience finds this valuable. I love to share this information. If anybody needs anything, please don't hesitate to send me an email. I'm very easy to find.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Bye-bye for now.
You've been listening to Talking with the Experts, hosted by Rose Davidson. Make sure you have a look at our back catalogue over at talkingwiththeexperts.com. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss out on any episode. We look forward to your company next time.